Welcome to the Property Management Mastermind Show with your host, Brad Larson. Brad owns one of the fastest growing property management companies in San Antonio, Texas. This podcast is for property managers by property managers. You'll hear from industry leading professionals on best practices, new ideas, success stories, and lessons learned. This is your opportunity to learn about the latest industry buzz surrounding property management, as well as tips and strategies to improve your business. Now here's your host, Brad Larson.
Hey everyone, this is Brad Larson, founder of the Property Management Mastermind. Thanks to our sponsors, we've been able to compile a tremendous list of offers and discounts, with this list expanding every episode. To see that complete offering, visit our website at propertymanagementmastermind.com. I also wanted to announce the Pulling Back the Curtain Conference going on in August this year in Denver, Colorado. For more information on that, visit our site for the link. Lastly, be sure to check out our Facebook group page and become a member.
Property Meld is made for maintenance work automation. Property Meld will work to schedule, remind, verify completion, and follow up with your residents automatically while providing the best-in-class communication system for your ease of use, your vendors, and your tenants. Begin reducing maintenance coordination time and increasing tenant satisfaction today. Learn more at propertymeld.com.
Choose Seacoast Commerce Bank as your property management bank of choice. Seacoast Commerce Bank specializes in trust accounts and business banking for property managers. One of their best features is a cash analysis program where they can assist in paying your property management related invoices. Contact Allison at 619-988-6708 to learn more. And be sure to listen to the Property Management Mastermind Podcast, episode number 26, about Seacoast Commerce Bank.
Hey everybody, in today's episode, I have Todd Orchide here from Central Georgia, and we're going to be talking about the 2019 Todd Talk. So I've been teasing him forever that we want to get together, and instead of a TED Talk, we're going to do a Todd Talk. So today's episode, we go through 10 or more different topics. We have a good discussion on what's going on in the property management business. So it's definitely an episode you want to listen to. So listen up. Take care. And welcome everybody to another edition of the Property Management Mastermind Show. I'm your host, Brad Larson. And today's guest, I'm very excited to have Mr. Todd Orchide on, and he's coming out of the Georgia, Florida region. So there's so many jokes I could throw in there just on that alone. But what we're going to do is we're going to give him a chance to do a rebut. So Todd and I had a great idea. Everyone's kind of heard of the TED Talk, you know, the whole YouTube phenomena thing that's going on, the TED Talk. And so this is going to be dubbed Todd Talk 2019. And in the Todd Talk, we have all kinds of fun debating topics. We got all kinds of good stuff. I mean, I have a sheet of stuff he and I want to debate on, and it's not really a debate because we're going over good ideas, best practices, and it's not really a right or wrong. And we're going to make this a really positive learning discussion. I mean, imagine if we're sitting at a conference at a bar and he and I are debating about one thing or another. That's kind of what the intent is here, to let you listen into the different views going on. And so I'm going to give Todd the floor in a minute to introduce himself, but I want to go give you some background about him. So he's a property manager. He's very well versed on everything that's going on in the property management industry. He knows what's up. He's also started a Facebook page for residential property management company owners only. So it's very exclusive. They have roughly 500 members and growing, but that Facebook page is really for only the decision makers and property management company owners. The Property Management Mastermind page is more for property managers. And so that whole broad definition can be people managing apartments. It can be people self-managing. It could be people on a salary working for whomever. It's property manager is a broader term. But Todd's group is very exclusive, and I love that group. I go in there quite a bit and post because we're talking to our peers that run and own property management companies. And so we're going to get, you know, we can talk employees. We can talk vendors and honest. And so, okay, I've taught a lot there. So Todd, please introduce yourself, who you are, where you are, and give us a few minutes there.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on the show, Brad. I really appreciate it. I'm usually a listener, so I'm glad to be on. I've got GTL Real Estate is our company here in Atlanta and down in Daytona Beach, Florida. So we're in both markets, kind of new down in Florida right now, but we manage just under 400 properties right now. We've kind of been there for the last couple of years, kind of holding steady. I've been running the company for about 7 years or so. I took it over from my father. Prior to that, I was an airline pilot based out of Atlanta here. So that's kind of my background.
Now, were you involved in any sort of the Airline Pilots Association? I don't know what those are. Tell me more.
Yeah. That's actually, I probably wouldn't be able to run this business if I hadn't done that, to be honest with you. I was executive in the Airline Pilots Association, which is basically like the big airline pilots union. So we were responsible for negotiating the contracts, all that kind of stuff. So thankfully, I had that experience before this, so that I was familiar with running multi-million dollar budgets and all that kind of stuff. Otherwise, just coming from a pilot background, I don't think I can run a company like this.
Yeah, one thing I really admire about you is you are that close to being an attorney. I mean, it's kind of interesting. You have a lot of knowledge on different subjects, and right, wrong, or other, at least you're able to articulate yourself well on what those topics are. And so that's really neat, I think, about you. A little side story. You want to hear a side fun story about attorneys?
Yeah, of course.
My grandfather, Frank Witcher, out of Sioux City, Iowa, he was the last attorney in the state of Iowa to pass the bar exam and never attend law school.
Nice.
He apprenticed under his father and passed the bar exam. In fact, they thought he fudged or cheated on the bar exam. They called him in for a verbal, and he passed that with flying colors. And so he was one of the last few practicing attorneys that never went to law school in the whole state.
So he actually practiced and everything?
He did for a long time, 30, 40 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's impressive.
He wrote a bunch of the bankruptcy laws in the state of Iowa as well. So he was kind of a big name. And so hopefully my cousins will hear this and appreciate that. So, okay, let's kick this off. You got your background. We own RentWorks here in San Antonio. So we're around 900 plus single family homes, give or take, 19 staff members, 10 in Mexico. So we have a decently similar business. So we're doing we were doing all residential. So we don't manage commercial. We don't manage HOA. We're very focused on residential. And so we wrote down, you and I, a list of a dozen topics to talk about. So the first one I want to kick off is we can call it a debate. Let's call it a discussion. Let's just call it a discussion on portfolio versus departmental. And so to give some background, we run sort of a hybrid, and we get questions all the time. I'm sure you do or see these questions. What's best? Should I run it portfolio? Should I run a hybrid? Should I run departmental? And I think there's merit in all of it. So let's kind of go through this. Now, what do you guys do there in your company?
Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of are coming from the same place as you. I mean, we kind of tried a few different things. Previously we had been all portfolio. So, we have, since we're all over Atlanta, we've got different territories. Atlanta's huge, just like Houston or, any big city. You got to divide it up into territories. And, so we had our individual portfolio manager. We had one for East Atlanta, North Atlanta, all that. And they did everything within their territory. And we just found that didn't work out too well. If they were, buried in work, they had more rentals that they had to try to get leased that month than anybody else, or if they had a bunch of repairs going on, they could fall behind, and it just didn't work out well for us. We didn't think that whole system worked, so we switched over to basically handling a lot of that stuff out of the office here in a departmental fashion, and then out in the field, it's just the BDMs and the leasing agents. They just do that part. They don't handle maintenance. They don't handle, tenant complaints, any of that kind of stuff, and we find that that works better for us. But I know that's certainly not universal. I've heard a lot of people who are making portfolio work really well. We just didn't find that it worked well for us at all.
Yeah. And you get some that are like animate about, the only way to run it is departmental, because they're the only way somebody can do something really well is if they do it every day, 24 hours a day, like bang out a widget. And that's the only way they can do it really well for that particular interaction. Now, to also go back and define portfolio, taking the Deb Newell has reminded me of this several times. True portfolios where they do everything. So like what they were doing for you in the Atlanta suburbs, they're doing everything. Leasing, rent collection, evictions, marketing, pictures, maintenance. All those things they're doing by themselves. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's the way it used to be. And we did that for a couple of years. That's right.
So what we've done, and you probably have done the same, you're like, okay, well, that's good to a certain level, but then also you have the departmental merits. And so that's where, like, for example, we're kind of a hybrid, and we should talk that term as well, because there's the left and right portfolio and departmental, and then you have sort of in the middle, like a hybrid. And so the hybrid for us turned out to be where we have portfolio managers that are single owner point of contact, but then we have distinct sections of our business, like maintenance. That's a distinct section, and they handle all the maintenance, working with the portfolio managers to communicate with the owners. In addition, we have our own leasing section, so they work together to show the homes, to take the applications, to approve the applications, to lease the homes in writing. So there's a couple things there that are different, but they're kind of all the same. So what else am I missing in that discussion point?
No, I would say, I mean, pretty much anything you do aside from full-on portfolio, like you said, where it's divided up and they do everything. Once you get away from that, I think pretty much everything is some sort of hybrid. You know, nothing is ever going to be purely, you know, segmented, departmental. You've always got to have stuff kind of spread out to make it work. You know, like in our case, we use Planet Synergy to do a lot of our back office processing. So, I mean, they're not a department. You know, they're dealing with things from a lot of different departments and kind of picking up the slack for us from over in India. So, I mean, that's not really a strict departmental, you know, structure. We've got VAs from over there handling things from a lot of different departments. So it's anything you do is going to be some sort of hybrid structure to try to make it work. Unless, like I said, you're just completely 100% portfolio. So, I mean, I think everything everybody has to do is figure out what works for them in their different, you know, markets and, you know, what their customers are expecting and just kind of mold it around that.
One thing I would think on that is, the only thing I'm animate about right now, and this could change who knows when, but I need the portfolio managers to see the home in person at some point, you know, at least on the rollovers, not necessarily the annual inspection, because they can do that from a distance, but on the rollovers, they got to see the home to, one, make sure they're doing the security deposit itemization correctly, and two, to make sure that the make-ready needs are met for that particular home. Now, I'm saying that because some companies, they do a departmental system. Like there's a big company in town. It's a big franchise company. Their portfolio manager, property managers, they never leave the office, ever, 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 ever. Okay, so there's okay. I'm okay with that concept. But you got to make sure you have really good inspectors that are giving you high quality photos and a good look at that property. And then your owners need to understand that going into it. Like, hey, our portfolio managers, your point of contact, they're never going to be going to the property to see it ever, ever, ever. And so that could be a rub that you may not like. But to provide a good service, we've basically succumbed to the fact that I need to get my portfolio managers into the field to see the homes at least at turnover and possibly even at marketing phase where they market the homes for rent. Brand new homes on the market. So what are your thoughts on that?
No, I agree with that. We do the same thing. And we don't call them portfolio managers here. We call them property managers or assistant property managers. But it's the same thing. You know, they're going out, they're doing that move out inspection and they're making sure that the property's in market ready condition. So I mean, we're doing the same thing. We want to see their eyes on it to make sure that everything's the right way. Because that's when you really see your net promoter score start to drop is when you got people moving into properties that aren't ready. Taken care of is very important.
Great topic to bring up is how do you know when your service levels are going south, your NPS scores are going south. So if you don't know what an NPS score is, I'm not going to debate a lot of time or dedicate a lot of time to actually train you on what an NPS score is, but that's the only level of service levels that you can get. That's the only indication is through an NPS score. Now you have to find out how to get that score the right way for you. Personally, we call everybody. So maybe that's another debate point we should kick around. Some folks are animate that, oh, email's fine. We'll just go do email and then they'll get an NPS score. It ties through SurveyMonkey, et cetera, et cetera. I'm a big, big believer of actually calling the people you want to survey and giving them a 2 or 3 question survey and getting an NPS score out of that. And that survey is being entered in manually by that person calling. So they're not actually ranking you 1, 2, 6, 10, you know, 1 through 10. The ranking is coming from the person that's calling them and they're giving a gut feel of what they felt they thought. Like, Todd, what did you think of the work order call that was done, you know, yesterday morning? You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, would you be able to rank Rentworks on a high scale? And you say, no, F Rentworks, blah, blah, blah. They showed up and got mud on the floor. Okay, I get it. That's a 0. How can we correct that problem? You see, now they can address the problem. That's the beautiful thing of a phone call versus a survey that they would do via SurveyMonkey online, that's going to turn into a negative Google or Yelp review somewhere because they haven't vented enough.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. We aren't doing it yet. That's something we would like to get to. And that's something, you know, I know you're using the VAs down in Mexico for that. And that's what we would like to do. We don't have any Mexican VAs at the moment. But when we get to that point, we would like to implement those phone calls like you're talking about. Right now, we're just doing it from the SurveyMonkey scripts. And I think you're right. There is a lot of benefit to doing that by phone. So you can try to solve those problems instead of just getting the feedback. You know, you're actually on the phone and able to take care of it. We just aren't there yet, but it's somewhere we'd like to get.
Something is better than nothing. So I applaud you for at least having follow-up surveys. It's interesting, you know, Bob Walters from Australia, he used to be a big part of LPMA, was a big instructor, trainer for property managers in the Australia area, Australia, New Zealand. And he would always say, do the one thing you hate the most, and that's go survey your clients, right? Because I think we're all a little scared what our owners would say to a certain extent. I mean, I think that's universal across the board. I'm personally always, you know, frightened to death about putting out an owner survey because God, who knows what, you know, could come back and then causes you more stress and now you got to deal with it, et cetera, et cetera. All right, switching gears. Renting to attorneys and or realtors. What's your initial thought on that?
So we don't care, to be honest with you. I mean, we'll rent to basically anybody, you know, and I haven't really had problems with attorneys. We have had problems with a couple of, what do they call them, legal assistants or paralegals. We had a real big problem with the paralegal, which, you know, kind of made me think about maybe I shouldn't be renting to people in this profession. But ultimately, we just decided, you know, we don't want to take that into account. We just want to look purely at, you know, can they pay the rent? Do they have the credit? That sort of thing. But, I mean, I certainly understand why some people, you know, don't want to rent to someone in those professions just because of the hassles we dealt with that one case. But it's just not something that we screen for.
Yeah, it's not necessarily something you can make a policy for, right? This is not a policy I would recommend to anybody. We don't carry that policy. But what you're going to run into is when attorneys want to apply, they're probably going to go through your lease and cut it up like it's confetti. And so they're going to send back a lease agreement back to you with, you know, 20 lines of red in the lease that they don't want to agree to. And so it's going to be a simple conversation that you should have to say, well, the lease is our lease. So we're not going to change it for you. Take it or leave it. And that's probably the bottom line. Now, renting to realtors, we've only had a few run-ins, but honestly, they've been really good to rent to for the most part. And I've rented and I've rent to today some of the high-level brokers in town that they're brokers, they're in between homes, they're building another home, they're renting from us, and no problems, right? They get it. It's the junior rookie realtors who think they know something. They're the pain in the ass. What do you think?
No, I agree with that completely. It's the same thing we run into when I'm sure you do co-brokering out there. We don't do a whole lot of it anymore now that we use smart lock boxes and everything. We used to have a lot of cases where we had realtors bringing in tenants and we would have to do co-op fees and everything with them. And we would have all kinds of problems just from that, you know, not even renting to a realtor, just having a tenant that was represented by a realtor who, like you say, is the junior person. They're just starting out. That's why they're, you know, doing this kind of work that they, you know, just don't have the experience to go out and get the sales. So they're helping tenants find places. And, you know, then they want to try to carve up your lease and everything, like you say, but they don't understand the landlord-tenant laws. Mm-hmm. So they have no idea what's going on or what we do here or why our lease is the way it is. So, I mean, that can be an absolute nightmare. But, I mean, like you said, if you're dealing with someone who's experienced and knows what they're doing and they actually defer to the experience of the property manager who actually does landlord-tenant inside and out all the time, that's a different story. But, you know, for the, you know, new agent who doesn't really, you know, do any of this, they sell two or three houses a year at best, then it can turn into a mess when they try to pretend that they know what they're doing in this space.
So lessons learned on that. I would say one of the things that we're running into is when folks want to either manage a home for an attorney and or lease a home to an attorney, what happens is they mark those contracts up, the PMAs, the lease agreements. And so one technique to consider is, I've tried this and worked this before and it has worked out well, is if you get a lease agreement back from a lawyer that's been redlined up, you explain to that attorney that, hey, now that you've marked it up, I have to take this to my attorney and my attorney is going to review it and my attorney charges $300 an hour. So every bit of his hourly charge is going to be deferred and sent back to you to pay at lease signing. That gives them a moment of pause. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Gives them a huge moment of pause because now, since they want to modify the terms and conditions that are outside of what they applied for, right? They agreed to the terms and conditions when they applied for the home. Now they're going to have to potentially pay to modify that particular lease agreement and or property management agreement so you can work with them. And so I've had that, you know, again, these are some shitty attorneys that, you know, have applied for some of our homes. They have marginal credit. You know, they're just clowns. There's good and bad in all walks of life. Just because they're an attorney doesn't mean they're good by default.
Oh, yeah.
And so you know this, I know this. And so this is just kind of a best practice thing, not necessarily like Todd saying, I would rent to every attorney ever. And I would say, no, don't rent to attorneys ever. It's more along the lines of sharing our experiences here. And so the realtor thing, the attorney thing, you just got to be careful. Protect your owners, number one. Protect yourself, number two. And then in the interest of trying to rent that home, potentially you can rent to that particular attorney. But just be advised that everything you say will be used against you in the court of law. It's almost like you're taking the Miranda right now. Because when you say to an attorney, I don't even know if you want to talk to him, you know, honestly, after that, you may want to do everything via email or in written communication with them. Because they will turn that around on you. They absolutely will. That's what they're trained to do. What are your thoughts?
No, I agree. We actually ran into this issue recently with an attorney who was an owner that we took on, where he basically wasn't complying with state law on how he was handling security deposits that he was holding himself. We have a law here in this state where if you have a certain number of homes, all of your security deposits have to be held in a state registered trust account. And he wasn't doing that on the properties he owned. And you know, we basically told him, you're going to have to transfer these deposits to us. And then he tried to argue with us that that's not anywhere in our management agreement. And he was trying to make all these crazy legal arguments and everything. And you know, he basically just didn't know the state trust fund law, because that's not the kind of law he practices. And he was trying to argue with us about it. So it was better for us. Like you said, we had everything in writing. It was our contract. We sent him copies of the state statute that talked about this. You know, he couldn't say that we told him anything over the phone because everything was in writing. And that's just how you have to deal with those kind of situations. And we just basically ended up telling him, if you don't believe us, talk to our lawyers. And then, by the way, we'll bill you for our lawyer's time. So, you know, that's settled the problem. Like you said, as soon as they have to start paying $300, $400 an hour to deal with this stuff, that kind of fixes it pretty quick.
Great story. Thanks for sharing. That was an awesome one. All right, let's go to another fun debate point, is first application versus best application concept. So Bart Sturzel and I have gone toe-to-toe on this, you know, and I love Bart. He's up in Austin, so we're kind of sharing the same markets. We're San Antonio, Austin. And Bart's policy, before we kick this off, all right, before this section of the debate, one thing I will say, that whatever policy you have it in writing and never deviate, okay? But let's discuss best practices on this, because that's not even a right term. Let's just say different strokes for different folks. How's that? But as long as those strokes are put into writing and followed to the letter, you will never run into trouble. So what we do, and then you can tell us what you do, is we do the best applications. And so let's say we had, today's Monday, let's say we had four applications come in for our home over the weekend. We would look at all of them and choose the best applicant. Okay. Similar to the concept of, like, if we were selling a home and we had four offers on a home, we would choose the best offer, not the highest. The best, maybe a cash offer is better, et cetera, et cetera. So when you're looking at the rental world, maybe that is the best credit. Maybe that's the best job. Maybe that's the best offer. I mean, just whatever it could be. You have to look at that. And on paper, you know, without looking at any sort of, like, no stats about racist stuff or, you know, what they do for a living or what their last name is or any of that junk, looking at, like, credit scores, income, job history, you know, time, you know, how long they want to rent there. I mean, just the family size, you can look at all this different stuff that's going to help you make a decision. So that's what we do. We take the best applicants. So tell me what you guys do there.
So, yeah, I mean, we do, basically what we do is we just allow all the applications to come in and we start processing them as they're received. So, you know, we use Virtually Incredible. They do all this for us. So they go through and process the application and we just approve or disapprove of each application. We notify them as they're either approved or disapproved. And then whoever is approved that brings in a security deposit first will get that property. So, you know, our standard is basically you either meet our standard to rent from us or you do not. It's one or the other. It's not best or, you know, anything like that. Now, that said, I agree completely with what you said when we started. It's all about making sure you have a written policy and you stick to it no matter what. So if you're doing best, there's nothing wrong with that as long as there's a policy that says what is best. You know, how do we score these applications? What is minimum? What is, you know, what is better than something else? Obviously, it's easy to do on credit scores, but, you know, on other criteria, you might have to have a matrix or something to figure it out. But the important thing is, if somebody comes in from HUD or from a civil suit or anything else, you need to be able to point at it and say, this is our policy. This is how it was applied in this case. And it's applied to everybody across the board. So that, you know, if there is a dispute over it, if there's a lawsuit, you can say, we treat everybody the same. Everybody's treated fairly. There was nothing subjective in how we handled this.
And that's exactly what we did. We had a HUD audit, which actually, let me go deeper. Because so in the state of Texas, it goes to the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And then that was turned over to the folks, the Texas Workforce Commission. That's who runs the HUD here in Texas. So it's interesting that way. But there was a complaint. And so the complaint was alleged racism because someone wasn't approved. And we showed the auditor everything. And we came out crystal clean. I mean, just clean as anything, because everything was in writing. We followed our steps to the letter. Everything was disclosed up front. And so the full audit produced basically an exoneration that said, yeah, you're doing everything correctly. And so I would expect the same in if you were to be audited, because if your policy says that we choose the first approved qualified applicant, we go with that one to get a security deposit. And if that one happened, you got a security deposit today at 9:35 a.m. And the other one, let me ask you this on a side question. So do you approve several at one time? Is there a race to the door for a security deposit?
It can happen that way. In a property that's high demand, you know, we could send out two or three different people who were approved, and then, you know, it's whoever gets it to us first. So, I mean, that sometimes happens. It's not too often. Most of the time we don't have, you know, a bunch of them. That would just mean that the property is probably underpriced. But it does happen on occasion where we have several.
Okay. So that, I mean, either one of those could lead into some heartbroke feelings, right? There's not much you can do, because my method, your method, the wrong method, right method, whatever that method is for you, that's going to lead at some point to somebody to say, well, I was treated unfairly because Todd approved me and I didn't get my security deposit there till the next day because I was saving the world. I'm Superman. I was saving the world from the next kryptonite bomb. And he's now discriminated against me because I'm Superman, you know, versus our policy is, okay, you're approved. Get us your security deposit. You have 24 hours. If you don't get it to us within 24 hours, we'll move on to the next qualified applicant. And so we give them a time window and they got to get it to us. But also there's always all these questions too about how long do you wait, right? Have you heard this concept? How long do you wait? Right.
So, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, people are always debating that on the forums and everything, you know, how long do you give them, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's a common question, and that's why we prefer not to even, you know, worry about it. We just say, you know, you're approved, you can get the deposit to us, or you could risk someone else getting it to us.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we do that system. But I mean, you could do it either way. I mean, as long as it's something that's everybody is aware of. What I say is the most important thing is when someone's applying for the property, everybody needs to know what the policy is up front. So it's right at the top of our application says how we handle this. So as long as you do that and everybody knows before they pay their deposit and goes through the effort of putting in their application, how they're going to be approved and what they have to do to reserve the property, then, you know, that's fine. They should just be aware of it up front.
Yeah, your policy is actually a little cleaner than ours in that regard, just because when you approve, let's say you approve two applicants, and then the first applicant brings the security deposit right now, and the next applicant can't get to it till tomorrow, or they say whatever, that's cleaner in writing versus our window of how many applications we're going to take can be fuzzy, right? We don't have an actual, like, we wait 36 hours or 42 hours or whatever to say we're going to collect in applications because we're just not that hot of a market. Interesting side note on that. So my wife does all the sales, Leah, and anytime we sell a home out of the inventory, and I put this little vignette on Facebook the other day. So we had a home that listed at 149, one story, 322, and no kidding, she had 12 offers in a weekend. And so where I'm going with this is she put in the agent remarks, we will accept offers up until 5 o'clock p.m. on Sunday evening, period. And that was in the agent remarks told to everybody. So that's a clean method to do this. Because let's say you're in San Diego and you're renting a beachfront property, you know, $1,000 under market. You're going to have to say that we're going to take applications until, you know, today is 3:38. We're going to take applications till 3:39 and shut it off. And that way you're at least a little bit cleaner. So not a lot to take out of that, just a good debate point. Any last comments on that particular section?
No, I would just, you know, emphasize again, you know, in writing, stick to it, you know, 100% of the time, no exceptions. That's always my big thing. No exceptions to policy. You put policy in writing and then you stick to it. You start making exceptions to it when you get yourself in trouble.
All right, cool. So you got your punching gloves there? You got your boxing gloves?
Of course. I'm ready.
We're going to move on to the next one, which is flat fee or percentage-based compensation. All right, you're shaking your head saying, oh, yeah, I'm ready for this one, Larson. Let's go. So you and I had been debating this. And again, there is no air quote right method, right? I believe that what works for us is a flat fee property management model. So we have multi-tiered pricing in a flat fee model. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing for your market. And you firmly, strongly believe in a percentage-based compensation model for property management agreements. And so give me your 2 cents on that, and then we'll go from there.
So the reason I don't like the flat fees is because eventually, you know, at some point you're going to have to raise those prices just to keep up with inflation. So, I mean, obviously CPI is always going up. Eventually you're going to have to raise these rates if you're using flat rates. That all happens automatically with a percentage base because the rents are going up as inflation goes up. So your income is constantly going up every year as you're doing lease renewals. If you're doing flat rate, eventually you're just going to have to do a price increase. And I just know as, you know, personally as a consumer, you know, let's look at Netflix, for example. If you're a Netflix member, how many times has Netflix raised your prices over the past few years? And how pissed off are you every time you get that email, them letting you know that your price has been increased? Or DirecTV, Comcast, whoever it is, they're all the same way. You know, they're sending out notices every few years or every few months telling you that they've raised your price. Nobody likes it. Everybody hates it. Pisses you off every time. I just don't want to be sending out those emails every few years telling owners, okay, we've raised your price, you know, X dollars, because that just puts something in their mind that, okay, maybe I need to start looking for another company now. Maybe I need to, you know, think about whether I want to find someone else who's got a lower price. And, you know, that doesn't happen if you've got the percentage base, because it's just when their price is going up for what they're paying you, their income is also going up simultaneously. So I just think it's a much cleaner way of handling it.
Okay. So what we like, and I'll just tell you what we like about the flat fee and not so much focus on the percentage, is we really wanted a point of difference for our market. And so that was a big adoption point for us, is we wanted to look different than everybody else. So we came up with a 3-tiered model for flat fee pricing. And one of our taglines is no monthly percentage. And so it's kind of a neat little tagline to throw out there, because other competitors out there, they're all doing percentage-based models. In our 3-tiered pricing model as well, what I succumb to, and I firmly believe that, is if you have a 3-tier pricing, X plus one, X plus two, just for fun percentages, what's going to happen is the higher end homes take the lower percentage tier, unless you force them down their throat. Okay. That's the only way to confirm that. Okay. Mr. I don't know, for fun, let's say Mr. $3,000 a month, owner, you have to take the X plan of the highest X plan, whatever that is, X percentage plan, you have to. And so that could be a turnoff potentially, because they're going to see the lower prices on the lower tier percentage plans and want that. Okay. All right. The other part of that is, again, the points of difference. Here's another concept to bring up. And this is from Scott Brady over in California, is he's doing a hybrid pricing. So yeah. Hear me out on this model. This could be a fun topic. So Scott's doing devising a system to where he's going to charge XX per month to all of the owners. All right. And that's XX, which less than 3 digits, you can do your own math interpretive in there. But then on top of that, once the home is leased and occupied, he's charging X percent per month. So he's getting like an admin fee every month from the owners, no matter what. I believe he's charging that no matter what. You know, the home's vacant, you want to do your own make ready for 6 months, whatever. You're getting charged an admin fee per month. Once the home is occupied, meaning you're doing your job, getting the home occupied, getting rent collected, that's when he charges at X percent of a management fee. So it's actually kind of a fascinating concept that he thinks is going to go over well, because he can advertise everything at a lower price.
Yeah. And I've talked to Scott about that. It's a very interesting, you know, I've never seen it before. It's revolutionary. I'm not sure, you know, how well it would work in our market or anything, but he says it's working really well for him out there as he started testing it out. And, you know, I've run it by our agents here, our BDMs, to see what they think of it. It's something we're actually considering. But it's a brand new thing that, as far as I know, nobody else has tried before. So it's a very interesting model.
Now, part of our business development mastermind consulting, what we end up looking at is the entire market. So we do a secret shopper for that market. So let's say we did it for you. We'd come in and do a secret shopper for your market and say, everybody else is doing X percent. So if you want to create an awesome point of difference, you may want to consider a hybrid, or you may want to consider a flat fee. If not, if the model's right for you, the model's right for you. But as long as you're not so far out of whack that I can't help you, we can work with that particular company. Because that's why we secret shopper them. You know, because if somebody's coming in and they want to work with a biz dev mastermind, but they want to charge XXX management fee, okay, 3 digits instead of like a normal XX or even an X, then we're just too far apart. We can't work with you, because no matter how many scripts and dialogues we give you, or how much awesome. We make your website look, we can't sell you because you are just too out of whack of the market. That's why we do a secret shopper in the beginning. Okay. So flat fee percentage, flat fee versus percentage model. Any other closing comments on that?
No, I would just, you know, following up on what you just said about secret shoppers, I would just encourage people to do that. We do that every year. You know, we go through it. We can't do the entire Atlanta market, of course, just because there's just too many people here. You know, you can't secret shop everybody. We always try to get a cross section. You know, I can't remember how many we do, 6 or 8 companies. And, you know, we've adjusted our prices on the basis of that. You know, we get that report back every year. You know, we will adjust our plans and make sure that we're staying competitive. And we made big changes in the Florida market after we did our secret shopper down there. So I just think that's something that everybody should do, whether they're having you guys do it for them, you know, as part of the consultancy, or even having to try to do it themselves. But I mean, that's an important thing to do.
Totally agree. And so here's another little caveat on that is you may have seen a post on it where we were looking at raising our application fees. So we hadn't raised our application fees in, God, it must be 4 years, right? We were X for 4+ years. And now we look around via Secret Shopper. We looked around and we're like, man, we're at the lower third now. We need to raise it to get us into the middle, to at least maybe the lower spectrum of the higher third. We don't want to be the top of the market for the application fees, but we're also, because of our campaigns of doing no security deposit options, we also do no giant pet fees and no giant upfront cleaning fees upfront, that we're actually the lowest in the market for total dollar amount to get into one of our homes. And so we're like, yeah, okay, we're missing the boat. We now have raised our application fees to kind of meet the market. So that's just a point of discussion to say, not only secret shop your main big fees, but just make sure you're charging an adequate amount to be equivalent to the market. So side note, all right, we were putting this at point number 13, but let's talk about that right now, because we're just starting to talk about fees just a little bit, okay? So we'll skip to point 11 and then bring that up, because what we had about a month ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, is we had what I would call a seagull. So a person came in on one of the forums. It was mine. It was Property Manager Mastermind Forum. That person came in and just dropped a bomb. Like, you're all unethical and you're all greedy sons of guns, and poof, they were gone. Okay. Just dropped the bomb and ran. And so the group just pummeled that person, just beat that person up left and right. And so we all have to kind of step back and say, okay, I'm not being greedy, but I need to provide a very good service for my owners, my tenants, and keep my staff and pay my staff well so they don't want to leave. And that's a tough balance. And so fees are very important. People should not run from fees. It's a mindset thing. What are your thoughts?
No, I mean, this is kind of, you know, where I get, you know, on my, you know, this is my issue. You know, fees are what have made a big difference for us over the past few years, where we could not be doing what we do today with any of the technology we have, anything that we have now, you know, our 24-hour call centers, all that stuff is funded by these fees that we didn't use to charge. And, you know, we couldn't provide the same level of service if we didn't do that. So that's why I always tell everybody, you know, it's not unethical to charge fees. In some cases, it might be unethical to not charge the fee, because as a result, what you're doing is you're providing a crappy service. Because if you can't fund any of this stuff that really should be expected of a property management company in the 21st century, then, you know, you're just doing everybody a disservice. Your tenants, your owners, your staff, everybody is getting a disservice because you're trying to be the bargain basement discounter and not charging these things that are justified. And honestly, these things that we're charging, it's not radical, you know, it's not these crazy things. Most of this comes out of the multifamily industry, who's been charging these fees for 15, 20 years. And, you know, we're just catching up to them. So tenants are already used to paying these things. You know, it's not like we're being unreasonable here, just being greedy. We're taking this money and putting it into good services for both tenants and owners. So people need to keep that in mind.
Are you tired of chasing tenants to comply with having renter's insurance? Insurance Management Group can solve this problem with a master tenant's insurance policy. Keep tenants in compliance with your lease agreement and help protect all parties involved. A master tenant's insurance policy can also add an additional revenue stream to your business. Contact Derek Scott at 918-728-8992 or visit imgadvisors.com. To learn more, listen to the Property Management Mastermind Show podcast, episode number 36.
Let's talk about the mindset. So you mentioned, keep that in mind, the mindset of charging fees and raising fees. And so this is something we learned from Darren Hunter and Dennis Youssef, is the mindset of being able to charge for what you what you deserve. Let's say charge the fees it accordingly. So one of the challenges is like people are listening and that's like, oh, well, I need to raise my X fee. And whatever that is, I need to go from X to X. But if I go from X to X plus something more, my owners are going to revolt. My staff is going to leave. The world is going to cave in. And none of that happens, right? And so you have to do the monkey math a little bit. So let's say you raise something by just a little bit. And so you go the aggregate. And the aggregate makes you $10,000 more a year. And you think you're going to lose one owner. Well, one owner might make you $2,000 a year. Okay, so you win. You win there. You lost one owner, you know, charging you, you know, losing you $2,000 a year, but you made $10,000 a year by one little fee. You still win. And that one owner that identified themselves as a C-class landlord, they're gone anyway. You didn't want to work with them to begin with.
That's exactly right. You know, and I would really emphasize that. You know, when you're starting to roll this stuff out, and Dennis and Darren kind of teach this. If you work with them on how to do these increases and everything, they'll tell you. You know, if you're worried about this, start out raising some fees on your C and D, if you have them, class owners, you know, see what happens. And, you know, if you lose them, who cares? You wanted to get rid of them anyway. They were awful. They were making your life miserable. Let them go. And, you know, what you'll find, though, is they don't go anywhere. Because the reality is, if you are secret shopping and you know you're, you know, somewhere in the right range of where you should be on these things, then, you know, it's not, nobody's going to go anywhere. Nobody wants to change property managers unless you really suck. You've got to be, and that's what Darren always tells everybody. You got to be pretty bad for an owner to want to leave most of the time, unless they're just an unreasonable jerk. So, you know, they're not going to go anywhere. Raise your fees to where they need to be for you to make some money, to provide the good service, and you'll be surprised how many people stick around. We haven't lost hardly anybody over fees. You know, I've fired quite a few owners just because we got tired of dealing with them on maintenance and repairs. But, you know, when we raised our fees and everything a couple of years ago, we didn't lose hardly anybody over that. So, I mean, it's just not an issue. People imagine it to be, and it's not.
And a lot of it is how you approach it. So, for example, what we're fixing to do here, and that's a Texas word, by the way, fixing. You can patent that. We're fixing to raise our and recreate our management agreements. So I mentioned this a while back. We've rewritten all of the property management agreements. We've raised our fees a few places, but we've lowered our fees in certain places. So we're kind of doing a redesign in the effort to gain more of our market share. So we're trying to give away the farm for the highest plan, but we're also charging a little bit more on the base plan. And so we're recreating our fees. So once we have it formalized and set with our marketing pieces by the end of this week, we'll make announcements. Okay, we'll start announcing this to the owners. We'll make any owners retroactive that want to go there. But 60 days from now, as part of our property management agreement, this is what I'd recommend, is tie your property management agreements into some sort of owner's handbook. I got this from Todd Breen. So Todd creates an owner's handbook and then ties his property management agreement into everything inside that owner's handbook. And so what he can do at a 60-day notice is change the terms of that management agreement in changing the owner's handbook. So don't do a secret squirrel. Notify everybody, be above board, put it in your owner statements, put it in your newsletters, put it in wherever you can get them noticed. Lesson learned here, make sure you record wherever you put it in notice, because you're going to get the one a-hole owner that's going to say, I never got that email. How did you ever send that to me? I never got it. I don't agree with it. I'm a sovereign citizen. I don't agree with it. You know, you get that one owner that will always pull that shit. So you're going to have to say, look, on today is 24 June. 24 June, we sent this newsletter to you via email. We posted this in your 1 July owner statement. It was in there in a note in your 1 July owner statement. And then in your 1 August owner statement, it was there. So you've had 60 day plus notice that this was going to happen effective 1 September. Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah. So trust me, and make notes in AppFolio or whatever software you use. Maybe send them a text message via your software that you use. Record that. Just make sure that you know, even if you record a phone call to them, because there's always going to be the one. Great story. Man, this is a good one. What did we do? I can't remember what we did. This is 5-6 years ago. Oh, I know what it was. We created an annual technology fee and charged everybody effective 1 January of the following year a annual technology fee. So everybody got charged an annual technology fee. And of course, the one owner whose email says, I have 8 cats. He's some retard that lived by himself with 8 cats, right? So he flipped out, started a truck complaint, Texas Real Estate Commission complaint about us raising our fees. And it was a, you know, crazy fee, a $25 a year technology fee, which pays for the 1099, right, to deliver electronically, to pay for a compiled annual statement, which we deliver electronically, to pay for all that. We had to initiate this one fee. And of course, you get one guy to flip out and fired us. So, all right, we made $10,000 a year, but we lost one jackass owner that we were making $2,000 a year off of. It's going to happen. But this guy was an F-class landlord. Okay, so, all right, side note, I'm getting sidetracked. Any other comments about the merit of fees?
No, I would just encourage people primarily, you know, we don't charge a whole lot of fees on owners. We charge some, like you say, the yearly fee for, you know, processing, you know, the statement at the end of the year and that sort of thing. But focus on the tenants. You know, if you're concerned about losing owners, focus on the tenant fees. You know, there's a lot you can do there, like I said, that multifamily's already doing. And you can make a ton of money in that area to provide better services and everything. And you don't have to piss off any owners in the process. So if you're worried about that, just start in that area and then you can go from there.
Mindset is critical. All right.
Yeah.
Switching gears, let's go talk about, now, do you guys do leasing only over there?
We do it. We don't really advertise it. We don't, you know, try to push it. You know, we're actually going to be taking it off of our, you know, we've got our three-tier pricing and it's kind of there right now. We're actually going to be taking it out just because we don't want to be, you know, really advertising it that much. But we'll do it. We find that we don't get a whole lot of business from it in the management side. People who want it are generally the kind of people who don't want to pay much money. You know, it's kind of your FSBO kind of landlord, you know, that just doesn't want to spend the money. So, you know, we just don't find it's all that advantageous. We'll do it if, you know, here and there for people who've done it for years.
Now, we do it on this side. We have actually five different plans. We have a leasing only, silver, gold, platinum, and then your multiple property owner, your MPO plan. So in the leasing only, I would almost call it a gateway drug. Like we try to get them in the door. We try to talk with them. We say, look, for only X dollars or more a month, you know, which adds up to only X dollars more a year, you can do full management. So why don't you go there? But some just want to do leasing only. And so the lesson learned I will tell everybody right now is collect everything up front. Collect everything. Oh man, don't tell me. Collect everything up front. We've had how many shitty C-class landlords F us over because we were doing half up front and half at lease signing, right? Trying to be nice guys, not trying to like gouge them up front thinking, you know, that we're going to run away to Mexico with their money. And so we were doing half up front. I think we got screwed over, I think, in 2018, probably three or four different times to where they would pay half, we'd market it, we'd find them the tenant, and then they would find an excuse not to pay us the other half. So our mistake for being trustworthy, okay, our mistake. Everything's on me on that one. So what we did is we raised our leasing only fee and we charge everything up front. So it's the whole risk reward concept. We're taking a lot of risk for minimal reward, so you're going to have to pay up front for it. And so that's what we do. And especially if they want to back out, we've had some that have let us list their home and then backed out. Oh, I decided to sell it. You know, after we've listed their home for rent for how long and found them a tenant and then they don't want to pay anything, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough one. So, you know, just a couple comments on leasing only. I don't want to beat the dead horse there, but let's move on to the next one because this is where we may end up having to put the gloves back on. So let's talk about handwritten contracts and notes versus electronic written contracts and notes. So to kick this off, and I'll give you the floor, my concept is I'm a big believer in actually writing things down with an actual pen on actual paper in front of people to let them see it. And I'm not saying you don't do this, but there were some things that I believe are cognitive as far as that relays from your hand to your brain to your eyeballs to everybody looking at you. And so you're ribbing me, and I suppose I deserve it. I'm kind of an old guy, but you're ribbing me that you don't want to step into the modern age and do electronic notes. So my two cents there, you go for yours. Go.
No, I think it is somewhat, you know, a generational thing. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, you have to know your audience. I would put it that way. You know, if you're meeting with someone who's a retiree, who's, you know, wanting to rent out their property and you're doing a listing presentation, probably not a good idea to whip out the iPhone and start typing away notes on it. That's not going to go over well. But, you know, you're meeting with, you know, a 30-year-old, you know, first-time landlord who, you know, they work in the tech industry. You know, they might actually think it's a little weird if you're sitting there with a pen and paper and, you know, doing it that way. So, you know, as with everything in business, it's always know your audience and kind of tailor it towards that. But personally, you know, we do all of our contracts electronically. We don't do any handwritten contracts at all. I won't even let my agents do it. I want all that stuff electronic just so we have eyes on it in the office before anything is signed.
Okay. So here's some debate points now. Already, I cut you off.
Yeah.
So we got some debate points first. I got to get all my thoughts. There's like 20 thoughts I got to go through. But so the first one is paying attention. So when folks think that you are taking notes electronically, they tend to think you're not paying attention to them, right? So that could be one. Now that's a debate point. You know, neither of us are going to get right on that one, but that's just kind of my thought. The other one is I'm a firm believer. This is what we teach at the Business Development Mastermind is you want to take notes in front of people. And so Todd just told me something, something, something about his bedroom upstairs. Okay, great. I'm writing a note. You're seeing me write the note. I'm looking up at you at your eyeballs and I look down at the paper. Okay, I got it. What else? And then we have a script that we coach and teach on. So when they walk into a listing appointment for business development, that they have an actual 6, 7, 8, 10 questions that they're going to ask. And so they go right down the checklist. Now, I like electronic stuff. Everything we do is electronic because, not everything, but a lot of things like the property management agreements, we have them signed electronically online. They're available anytime, day or night, that they can sign electronically online through a widget through Adobe Sign. However, comma, my biz dev team always has a written contract with them. So hear me out on this. You're going to love this close, right? I talked about this during pulling back the curtain last year, is if you're going to be into a listing appointment, you got to have a sign in your truck or your car, got to have a lockbox, and you got to have a written agreement because you can physically get them to sign right then and there. And you can do this electronically. Okay. I'm not saying you can't, but there's something about them putting their name in writing that is psychological. That means they're more committed. So all electronic is not necessarily more right than the written method. I'm just trying to give you some human history here that man has been putting stuff in writing for 1,000 years. And so we're used to seeing that there's actual scientific proof that relates to your hand, to your brain, to give you a better whole understanding of that particular action that you just took. Now, I've said all that. A closing method, I think, is you can have them sign electronically and or in writing. So they physically do it right there in front of you. You put a sign in the yard, you can put a lockbox on the door and make sure you have your camera or at least your smartphone to take 3, 4, 5 pictures just to get them warmed up and get them on the market this afternoon. Because one of our closing questions is this, how soon would you like your home to go on the market? Well, I want my home on the market this afternoon. Got it. We can do that. I can take pictures. I can put video. I can do everything right now to get you on the market here this evening. You just got to sign this agreement and you can sign it electronically or you can sign it on paper. All right. So let me ask for your help here. On electronics, what platform are you using and how are you doing that?
We use DocuSign, which is built into PropertyWare. So we use the integration on that so that everything is basically, you know, one click and an agreement goes out. So it's very difficult to set up. You know, it's a huge pain in the ass when you have to set it all up at the front end. But after that, it makes it all very easy to get agreements out, you know, with just a few seconds.
What happens if you don't have Wi-Fi or LTE?
Well, we're not doing any of that on the spot right now.
Okay.
You know, we're not doing it that way. Now, that is something we are talking about doing where we would be able to sign those agreements, you know, there at the site, you know, where the listing presentation is done. But right now, we actually don't do that.
Okay. Because I think Adam Willis posted that question.
Yeah.
Adam was wanting to know what platform would you use to sign electronic agreements in person? That meaning not only are you using an iPad or whatever the heck is out there, whatever Microsoft thing has, but what like physical, is it Zip Form? Is it Adobe Sign? Is it, you know, DocuSign? What is it? And so your question there or your concept is this tying into PropertyWare through DocuSign. And so DocuSign, of course, is a program that runs off of either Wi-Fi and or cell phone reception. So if you don't have that, you got to be careful, you know, because if you're in a listing appointment and that thing is not pulling up, man, that's almost embarrassing, right?
Yeah. I mean, our thing is I actually have a policy. We don't do any contracts unless two sets of eyes are on them. So, you know, I don't want any contract signed and then me regret what was written into it. So if I've got some BDM out there and they frankly screw up the contract and they write something in there incorrectly, you know, I've got legal liability there. So I don't want them to be able to do that on their own. So we're trying to figure out how to do this where before they go out to the listing presentation, we prepare the contract. We have a second set of eyes to review it, make sure it looks good. And then the only thing they have to do when they get there, if they want to sign it on the spot, is fill in the minimum rent. That's the only thing they would have to put in there and then they can sign. So we might go to doing that on paper contracts, but right now we aren't. But that's just my hang up is I don't want any contracts signed that haven't had, you know, two sets of eyes on them. And I just haven't gotten over that yet. And I probably never will, to be honest. I'm just too picky about my contracts. But that's why we're not doing that right now.
One point on that is I would recommend for all your business development staff members to ensure that you have a place in there that where they can fill in what they did on the site visit. So make them fill in the date and the time that they visited that particular site. I don't care if it's a drive-by because it's tenant occupied, that's fine. Drive by and take a picture, because you don't want them to sign up that piece of junk home and then put that in front of your operational team. They're going to be pissed off from the very start. The other side of that is, okay, just talking about notes. So a lot of folks, this is proven. I posted a podcast link about this the other day. This is all scientific stuff, that if you're taking notes in a conference electronically, let's say you have your laptop is open and you're staring at your screen, Twittering or Facebooking or whatever you are not as connected as you would be if you are pen and paper, taking notes, writing down something, looking up with your eyeballs, writing down something. You're not as physically connected. So you can debate that, right? I know there's hardcore folks who go to any conference, they're opening up their laptop and they're taking notes. I would venture or challenge them to take notes in writing and then put those later on into your device. Just kind of a later on thing. All right, that's not a yes, right, or no answer, but I just wanted to make that comment. So I want to move on to here. So let's talk about some of the merit of consultants and or coaches, because we're sort of along the same lines, but we also want to explain to the audience that, you know, both Todd and I, we're not squishy-feely people. You know, we're not going to hug it out. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to have motivational speakers come in and tell me to walk on hot coals. We're not that way. Okay. So you need to know that going in. So I like certain coaches. I like certain consultants. I think there's a lot of value in there, but there's also to the point where they start crossing over into the life coach scenario that I'm not a big fan of. So Todd, I want you to add your 2 cents here.
No, I would make that same distinction. I think I would say there's a difference between a consultant, you know, someone who has an expertise, they have background, they have experience in this, and they're helping you to implement a certain type of thing, as compared to a, you know, generalist coach, you know, a life coach, you know, however you want to call it, who is, you know, telling you how to, you know, make your marriage better, or, you know, how to improve your personal relationships. And, you know, I've even seen some of these coaches, quote unquote, who are telling people what to do with their diet and their exercise. And, you know, they have no schooling in these things. They have no idea what they're talking about. They just read a book and now they're the expert on it. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's unethical. Number one, they shouldn't be doing those things because they're not qualified to. But number two, I mean, it's just, it's a waste of money. You know, if you want to find an expert in those subjects, go out and find one, and, you know, you can pay them for their expertise. But I think it's just crossing the line when someone who doesn't have experience in those things, doesn't have the proper qualifications, is starting to, quote unquote, coach you on that sort of stuff.
Yeah, switching it up into the conferences too, that also talks about, you know, the last few experiences I've seen with this is, you know, one conference I went to, there was a guy giving a discussion about doing pushups. He did daily pushups. And that was the life-changing event for him. And he wanted it to be the life-changing event for you. So, hey, cool. I do pushups when I do workouts and stuff. Okay, great. But I don't know if it's going to be effective doing daily pushups, and it's not going to change your world to a certain extent. The other one I just saw was drink more water. You know, that was another, that was another presentation that you and I may have seen at a recent conference. And that was the synopsis of the speech, was drink more water. And, you know, both of us, you and I are both like shaking our head now. Come, you know, that was what we took away from it.
Yeah. And that seems to be the flavor of the month now with motivational speakers, is stay hydrated. And I think they just kind of all hear each other, you know, say these things, and then they decide they're going to go push it too. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's good advice, I guess. But, you know, my business isn't going to generate 200,000 additional revenue next year because I drank more water. And that's not what I came to this conference for. So, you know, help me. How do I improve my business? That's what I'm here for.
Exactly. And that's part of the reason why we formed Property Management Mastermind Conference. And you were the big enlightening source for that. Honestly, I give you thanks and kudos to that, because I remember seeing a post about a particular conference come up, and Todd chimes in and says, Brad Larson, please do something, start a conference. I'm like, okay, it is time, because the perfect storm has aligned to where we have now find a market and a time frame to do an annual conference every single year. We've chosen Las Vegas, and we've chosen the March time frame every year till the end of time. And so I'm going to book March 2021 and March 2022. I'm flying out to Vegas week after next to book a venue. And so this year, March 2020, is going to be our first annual conference. You can find it at pmmcon.com, and it's going to be phenomenal. So one of the things that I'm talking about with you is the whole motivational coach thing, the whole motivational life coach thing. I hate motivational speakers. And so that's one of the things that we distinctly avoided out of this particular conference. The folks that are going to be there are industry operators and red meat people. So for example, one of our keynote speakers is Andrew Reese. Andrew Reese is a household name coming out of Australia. The guy has done the property management thing to the highest level and sold and started companies, and he's sold again. And he's amazing, amazing speaker. I model a lot of what we do after what he did in his business. Another one is John Warlow. And John Warlow wrote the book Built to Sell. And he's got a podcast show called Built to Sell. This is a guy that's going to be another keynote speaker for us. And he's actively working with businesses daily. And so he's also a consultant on the business side. He's a doer, right? That's the kind of person we want in. The last keynote speaker is going to also turn into an optional seminar is Mike Bahima. He's with Echelon Front. Remember the guys that wrote Extreme Ownership, the Navy SEALs that wrote that book? He's part of their team. He was Main Gun Mike from that book. If you remember that book, that's who Mike Bahima is. He's coming in and teaching a 75-minute presentation on the facets of leadership. And oh, it's just amazing. I'm so excited. And then he's also doing a 3-hour seminar Wednesday afternoon. So that's part of our conference. That's an example of what you and I want to see. And so when we built this conference, so I'm like thinking back in my mind, okay, what does Todd want to see in a conference? This is what we want to put in, because I want to see what I want to see and you want to see what you want to see. And they're probably along the same lines, and it doesn't involve life coaches and hugging it out. Would you agree?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, everybody you just named there, you know, what's the key to it? You know, all of them have personal experience, you know, tons of experience in what they're going to be talking about. And, you know, there's so many people out there, you know, all they do is speak. I mean, that's their entire life. That's their profession is speaking, and they have no actual doing in their background where they have qualifications to justify them going around and talking. But, you know, everybody you name there, they've actually done it. You know, they know what they're talking about, and they can actually impart real knowledge that you can take back to your company and use to make a difference. So, I mean, we're definitely right on the same page on what we want to see at these conferences.
So the big concept there that I'm going to hone in on every year is the mastermind concept. You started the Facebook group for a mastermind series. That's exactly what we're going to do inside of these conferences. We're allowing for small group interaction every single day. And that's going to hone in on what this conference will be, to give you opportunities to network in a small group on day one, opportunities to network and learn from what happened on day one, on day two, and the awards banquet, where you're sitting across somebody that you may not necessarily know, because we do assigned seating at the awards banquet. So you're going to network with folks you may have never met. By force, you're going to be there next to them. You're going to start talking. Oh, wow, I'm amazed. You know, for example, I always tell the story. I met a lady at one of the conferences. She manages homes in Phoenix. And I just bumped into her and I started talking to her. And it wasn't like she wasn't in the little click. You know how we all get clicky at these conferences, right?
Sure.
It wasn't in that little click. I just bumped into her. I just started chatting her up. And I said, so how big is your company over there in Phoenix? She's like, well, it's 1,500 homes. I about fell over. I'm like, whoa, that's a big company. Yeah, honey, but I manage only 750. We own 700 of those homes.
Oh, my gosh.
That's exactly what I said. And I'm like, wouldn't you have loved to sit next to that lady at a banquet? To talk to her for an hour or 2 hours? Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's switch gears. Let's get on the gloves again, okay? Let's talk about contracts. Let's talk about month-to-month contracts or long-term contracts. And so let me start it off. Okay, we can talk about this. We are purposefully switching our management agreements and reorganize our management agreements to allow for a month-to-month type of scenario. So we're signing up new owners, and we're getting them to commit to 6 months, right? Because we tie our contracts into the lease agreements. So doing any sort of like start date and end date is silly, because we tie them into the leases. However, if they want to leave after month 7, there's no cancellation. So we're actually not going to charge a cancellation. So it's effectively a month-to-month contract after month 6. And so you were talking about online about the value of long-term contracts. And I think you had a couple of good points. So I want you to bring those up.
So, I mean, the first thing I would say is my biggest issue here is there's not just a relationship with the owner. You know, that is one relationship you have when you're managing this property, but there's also the relationship you have with the tenant. And the tenant, when they were looking to rent from somebody, they screened you just like the owner did. You know, they went to see what your Google reviews were, Yelp, if they're in a market that cares about Yelp, I hope not, but possibly. You know, they went and looked into those things, and they made a decision as to whether they felt you were a reputable company. So then they rent from you. And then let's say this owner, because you have a month-to-month agreement, decides to cancel 7 months in. So now this tenant is stuck with this owner. Well, why did the owner cancel? Well, we found in most cases when we had owners canceling, it was because the owner didn't want to get repairs done that we said he had to get done. So what's going to happen is he's going to cancel. The tenant's going to get stuck in this property where repairs aren't getting done. It's probably illegal in our states anyway for those repairs not to be done. So who's the tenant mad at? Well, they're mad at me because I placed them in the property and we told them they were rent from us. So now they go and leave us a nasty review on Google. Now we look bad because of what the owner did, and the tenant's still stuck in that property through the end of that lease. So for me, that's the biggest issue. You know, the tenant, when they rent from me, they should have an expectation that they're only going to deal with me. They shouldn't have to worry that they're going to be passed off onto the owner or, you know, some other management company who might be a bargain basement discounter. They should know who they're dealing with. The other issue is it's an issue of what is the value of your property management company. When you have a property management company, the value of your company is essentially the value of the contracts. We don't have a lot of assets. You know, some of us have, you know, a brand name possibly that means something that measures into goodwill. But for the most part, the value of your company is the value of the contracts you have. So if your contracts are all cancelable at 30 days notice, 60 days, whatever it is, then that's really the only value you have. There is no long-term value where someone who buys your contracts or your company can expect a long-term revenue stream. So I think that's a real concern if you're looking at the possibility of exiting anytime soon.
All valid points. Very, very good points. I would want to comment on, so a couple of things that we're looking at is the marketing facet of this. So in the opportunity for growth, we want to be able to market to our owners that we don't have any sort of long-term cancellation fee. Because what you're talking about is the slicky boy owner that comes in and hires us for 6 months and then fires us month seven. Okay, if that happens, now we can do this here in Texas. So this is a Texas thing. We can nullify the lease because the lease agreement is very specific to us. It's our property. We wrote it. We have it TREC approved. And so it's our lease agreement. Also, there's other things that we're charging the tenant, such as a resident benefits package, which is us providing tenants value and giving them tenant liability insurance, renter's insurance, et cetera. So if there is no lease agreement, and there's none of that being provided through the management company, the owner should have a nullified lease. So we basically would nullify the lease. Okay, so that right, wrong, or other, you got to go lawyer up and decide if it's right for you. Don't quote me on any of that. And so the last point is the value of your company. Now that's a debatable point. You know, you and I have gone round and round, and we kind of agree to disagree because there's merit to be said about what you're talking about in other industries, right? The value of the company is based on the contractual value of those PMAs that you have signed. And so if those PMAs are all five-year agreements, it makes your company that much more valuable because you're potentially selling 5 years of assets, okay? In theory, that may not necessarily be right because the owners could potentially back out if they really, 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 really want to back out. And so if anybody has ever acquired a company, they'll come back and tell you that this owner just had a case of the ass and wanted out. And so are you going to fight them? No, you're probably going to let them out. All right. But I do think there's points of both of what we're talking about that are accurate and none of it is inaccurate. Okay. I would at least say that. And hopefully you would agree to me on that. None of what we're talking about is inaccurate, at least. Some might be better for others. Some might be different market specific. But that's the beautiful thing about what we do is it's all market specific. It's different. And so what this does is it protects our industry. Would you at least agree that it protects our industry from Uber coming in and effing us all up?
Well, yeah, and that's actually an interesting subject because I think that the entire concept of, you know, the Uber of property management coming in and ruining us all is a phantom concern. I really don't think that's not anything that keeps me up at night at all. I don't think there's going to be some giant tech company that comes in and is able to somehow, you know, go out there and figure out how to tame 1,000, you know, thousands of different jurisdictions, knowing all of their different rules and regulations and idiosyncrasies. I just think everybody needs to stop worrying about that. I know that's kind of the flavor du jour now at the conferences. I was just at a conference recently where there was someone from one of these big tech-oriented management companies who was trying to push that as, you know, the coming thing. And I don't buy it. It's not going to happen as far as I'm concerned. This is a people business. It's a local business. You know, there's not going to be, you know, the Delta Airlines of property management. I do not see it.
I wholeheartedly agree with you on that one. I don't think there's going to be a major disruptor that's going to come in and just totally screw us up like an Uber did to that industry. There could be some players that come in and have an influence, but not like they're going to screw up the rest of the country. It's way too small. I mean, it's way too fragmented and decentralized to have any sort of large impact. All right, so let's switch gears, talk about the touchy subject. So you and I are going to volunteer our comments in a very positive, want this to be a very good thing type of a way. We're going to comment about a few things on the National Association of Residential Property Managers. And so I hear people in the background, oh, don't go there. Don't you go there, girl, right? So we're going to be the brave ones and actually have a few comments about NARPM. So you and I, to start this off, are giant fans. I'm a huge fan. I will always be a member. I love what they've done for us. I will always be a part of what they do. I always want to go to their conferences as much as I can. And I really agree that they have come and done a lot of good. However, I want to be the one brave one to actually maybe say, hey, maybe we could do a few things better, And so we're going to try and have a very constructive conversation about those things. And hopefully we don't tick off a lot of people because that's not our intent. We're trying to potentially identify a few things that could be improved. I'm not perfect. So if you came in and said, Brad, you need to grow some hair, I would say, yep, you're probably right. I could, if I could grow hair, I could, I would. But let's just go back to this. All right. So some of the things that we want to talk about with NARPM is some of the things that we think potentially could be improved. And so I'm going to let you lead this. And if we get a little bit touchy, I'll cut you off and we'll just go talk about something different. But let's go from there. What do you think?
So, yeah, I mean, I would just emphasize what you just said, too. I'm a big supporter of NARPM. I attend all the conferences. That's where I've gotten some of the biggest ideas that improve my company. So I'm very much a supporter. And I think everyone who's in property management should be a NARPM member. That said, any organization, whether it's my company, your company, NARPM, anything can improve. So there should never be an attitude that, you know, we don't want to talk about these things, because that just leads to a situation where there's stagnation and where there's no new ideas coming in and where it can't be improved. So, you know, no matter how much you support it, you should still be willing to talk about it. So, you know, that's where this is coming from both of us, I think. It's not, you know, criticism. It's just, let's improve it. And, you know, where I think there needs to be a lot of improvement is in that sort of mindset where, you know, we want to make sure that there is a way for new ideas to get into the organization so that we can make those kinds of improvements. And the way we can do that, I think, is to make it more of a democratic organization. So, you know, we all got this email today, for example, with the elections that are coming up. And I almost feel the need to put elections in quotation marks because that's not really what they are. You know, we don't really get to, it's not like an election we even do for, you know, there we go, there's the email. This isn't like a city council election or anything else. You know, we're not getting to vote on different platforms or, you know, different ideas. It's just, here are your candidates, vote yes or no. And, you know, you can try to write in people if you'd like, but, you know, you got to get 5% of the members and you're not going to be able to do that. And then even if you do that, they got to go through this interview process. And I just don't think it's very democratic. And I think because of that, it prevents new ideas from getting into leadership positions to where we can try to improve the association.
Let's go through this. So, any member who wishes to serve as a candidate for the 2020 NARPM Board of Directors must submit a candidate's name in writing by X date and have 5% of the professional members recommending the candidate. Now, so let's say I go out on Facebook and I get a 5% nomination. I submit it to this particular committee, the nominating committee. Well, the nominating committee will vote whether they like me or don't like me. But tell me who nominates the committee. Nobody knows. The nominating committee is secret squirrel that nobody knows who it is. And it's when you get on there and they do a Zoom call and you do an interview and you have this nominating committee, that secret squirrel in the background, they're going to say, yes or no, I like Brad Larson. I'm going to nominate him for a board of directors. And I don't believe that to be very democratic at all. What do you think?
No, I agree. It's not. I mean, this should really be about ideas. You know, that's what, you know, we're all Americans in this association. So, I mean, we should all agree with the idea that it should be a contest of ideas and not, you know, who do you know? How well did you interview? You know, that's not what this should be about. It should be about who has the best ideas for how to improve the association and the profession. So, you know, that's what this should be about. And the members should get to decide that. They should be able to hear these ideas from candidates and decide who they want in these positions. And like you say, does anybody even know who's on the nominating committee? I mean, I know one member, Off the top of my head, I couldn't name who the rest were. And, you know, it's just, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me as to how it's done. I mean, I understand why they do it, because I've heard the arguments said before that, you know, we want to make sure that there's continuity. We want to make sure that there's experience. All that makes sense. But I think you got to have faith in the membership to elect the people who are going to make that happen.
Sure.
Instead of trying to force it.
Sure. So if I get myself nominated and I knew all of the nominating committee, they'd all be getting nice gift baskets from me and bottles of scotch and free trips and back rubs, right? They would, it'd be Joe Biden all over them, right? But I get it. They're secret squirrel. Nobody knows who they are. So I can't do that. And that's to protect them, to protect the honesty of the vote into it. The other part that really, I don't really necessarily agree with is the volunteer leadership. And the volunteer leadership concept of bringing somebody in to be an air quote leader for a year. You know, if you're going to bring in a leader, let them serve for 2 years or 3 years. Give them an opportunity to train up, to stay in that position, be good at that position, evolve to being great at that position, and then let them rotate out. So they have RVPs for 2 years. Why not make the board of directors and the NARPM president and the incoming president make them 2 year positions? I don't get all that. But that's, you know, again, anyone who's in that headshed, the top echelon, they'll come beat you and I up. They're going to say, well, we don't do it that way because of this, 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 and this. And okay, yep, you got me. You're right. By the bylaws or whatever, you got me. So we're going to do it your way because that's in the bylaws and that's how things have always been done. And so that's something I'm not real fond of. I think that if there was a full-time CEO, a full-time directorship that actually was incentivized to make NARPM great, that it would be a better run organization. And so do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that completely. I mean, this really comes back to my experience with the union as to how we structured that and how, you know, all these nonprofits and, you know, unions and all that stuff structured, these are all the same kind of things. They're all, you know, working to improve a profession or an industry or whatever it is. And our structure is unusual, to say the least. So, you know, I think you're right. You need to have someone who's there who has several years to implement a plan. You know, they should run on that plan. And then once they get elected, they should be able to have some time to implement it and make it work. And, you know, it shouldn't be something where, like you said, I mean, a year is a short period of time. I mean, we're already in what now? It's about to turn July. You know, half this year is over. Has anybody even noticed it practically? A year flies by. So it's not very much time to get anything implemented. But frankly, I think it's designed that way. They don't want anybody to be able to, you know, do a lot of change. The structure is not set up for that.
The structure is not set up for that because it's set up to where they, if anybody wants to get in to the change mode, there's certain folks in that organization that can squash that change and just maintain the status quo no matter what. And so let's talk about there's a lot of good points. I mean, what they did with the NARPM accounting standard is great. They've been doing great conferences for years. But in the conference scheduling, you know, that's been one of our biggest detractors is how they schedule some of these conferences and who makes the decisions on when they schedule and where. And so this has created an opportunity for us, all right? Because of the demand, everybody wants a conference in Vegas. The Property Management Mastermind Conference is going to establish itself in the Las Vegas market in March every single year. And so the other conferences that are out there, they're going to potentially have to work around that because we're going to book it and make that a great show every single year to blow everybody away. And why are we doing that? Because the market wants it. And we want to take charge of that and make sure that everyone gets a great experience at that particular conference. So that's kind of left the door open, let's say, to make that happen because of whatever politics and scheduling conflicts that they had with forming committees and getting people to approve stuff and getting it through all of this bureaucratic red tape. Well, there is no bureaucratic red tape in our conference because I'm it. I'm the deciding factor, right?
I listen. You're the decider.
Yeah, I will listen to you. I will take notes. I will, you know, take to heart what you want to see at a conference. But at the end of the day, it's one decision. And so it's not a democratic thing. However, neither was FedEx, right? And FedEx was built. They built a really, really, really good mousetrap, let's say, and beat the heck out of the UPS, and they beat the heck out of USPS. So we want to be that for everybody. All right, any other comments on that? And I'm trying to really stay positive. I love NARPM. You know, I don't want to get nasty phone calls and letters off of this episode, but I do think there could be things that need to be improved. And I just want people to not be afraid to talk about it. They're not going to blackball you and kick you out of the Secret Squirrel Club. Okay. You can still attend their conferences and you can still be members.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. And I would hope, and I know you and I will probably get some angry emails and phone calls and stuff after this is released, but I would hope that wouldn't be the case because everybody should want, you know, constructive criticism, which is what I think this is. We're not just here bashing and, you know, trying to trash anybody. We haven't even named any names or anything like that. So nobody should be mad or upset about any of this. It's all, you know, constructive criticism, wanting to improve things. And, you know, I hope it's taken in that way. And, you know, we're able to have those kind of conversations to help improve the association. Because like you said, if you're not listening and trying to get real feedback, what's going to happen? It's going to be just like what happened with the conferences. Someone else is going to fill that void. If NARPM doesn't fill the void, then someone else will. So you need to be listening. Just like any business or anything else, you have to listen to your customer. And the customer is the member. So, you know, let's have these conversations and try to improve things. It's to everybody's benefit.
Every single property manager needs to join NARPM.
Yes. So
there's my pitch. There's my free commercial to NARPM. Everybody needs to join and contribute and participate in your local NARPMs, go to your regional events and go to the state events. So,
yes.
You know, all and the national events, excuse me. So I'm planning on being at the Southern States Conference. I'm going to be at the NARPM National Conference. I mean, I'm there. I'm a conference goer. I love what they do. We just think that, you know, the volunteer leadership should stay longer. We think a couple different things of how we get into the volunteer leadership should stay. You know, because if you're a volunteer leader, how much are you really focusing your efforts on that particular business when your eggs and bacon, your steak is being running a management company or running a vendorship, whatever you're doing, you know, to earn your money. You're a volunteer leader, okay? That's not enough to really change or lead an organization. You're just kind of like guiding it, okay? Anyway, let's kind of switch gears. I think that was all we needed to talk about today. Anything that we missed that you want to touch on?
No, I don't think so. I think we've been going for over an hour. I think we've had a pretty good conversation here. So, you know, I think it's been a good talk.
This is like a fireside chat. It's like the Todd talk. You know, here we are at the bar. We're having a scotch. And Todd and I are debating about certain different things. And I hope everybody got something out of this episode because, you know, I think there were a couple of good points in there, a lot of good points, where, you know, we're not necessarily perfectly on the same page, but that's the beautiful thing is it fits, it works. Make it work in your organization and you're going to see rave results. So Todd, I expect to see you at our conference coming up in March. And this has been a fantastic episode. I really appreciate you coming on. Any parting comments for the team?
No, I really appreciate you having me on and I will, I'll see you out at Southern States next month, I guess. And I'll definitely be out at your conference coming up in March. So I really appreciate it.
Great. Thanks again, Todd. We'll talk soon.
See ya.
This show is sponsored by the best home inspection software on the market for property managers. We endorse and use Z-Inspector as our software of choice for our team to document home inspections. We particularly like their 360 degrees camera system that produces amazing views of the interior room. Your clients will love Z-Inspector documented inspections you provide them. Visit www.zinspector.com to learn more.
Tenants not changing their air filters? Costly HVAC repairs and unhappy owners got you down? Filter Easy is a subscription air filter delivery service that solves this problem by shipping filters directly to the tenant's front door when it's time to change. Tenants actually change them, which reduces HVAC-related maintenance calls by an average of 30%. Filter Easy's no-cost-you solution functions as a profit center to give you back time and money. Call 1-800-308-1186 today to learn more.
This has been a podcast episode by PropertyManagementProductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us feedback, and come back for our next episode.